turn of the 19th century, the Great Migration relocated millions of African Americans from the rural South who were looking for opportunities. But Black Americans were not the only ones to head north for jobs in the auto industry.
It just took one family to say, we're doing well, come on up. And before you know it, we had a small colony of Mexican families that had settled in Southwest Detroit.
The Southwest part of Detroit is still growing. In fact, it's the only part of the city where the U.S. Census recorded population growth in last year's count. Today, we're taking a closer look at the area, including Corktown, Mexicantown, and Delray. There's a lot of vibrance here, and also a lot of things that need attention. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We'll get into the current development in Southwest in just a bit, but first, we want to talk a little bit about the history of the area.
There was a lot of hustle and bustle, as you can only imagine. Henry Ford putting out the word of being able to work $5 a day was a lot of money, being able to establish your family here. And what happened here was that the middle class was created.
That's Maria Elena Rodriguez, a native Detroiter, an entrepreneur, and activist. She was part of the team that conceived and created the Mexicantown Mercado, back when she was president of Mexicantown's Community Development Corporation.
And so we had people coming in. The word spread. It's always word of mouth. When word spread that there were these opportunities up in Detroit, Michigan. And they actually settled in Corktown in what is now considered downtown. And at the time, back in the day, in the early 20s, it was still residential. They settled there, and then we continued to grow.
Do we know anything about the people who put roots here? I mean, were there contingencies from specific parts of Mexico in Corktown?
Oh, for sure. So we had visionaries, I mean, way back. One of the ones that stands out is Mr. Jose Alfaro. Up until his late 80s, he was very active in our community. He wanted to make sure that the Mexican families that settled here, that they did not forget their roots. He felt it was important to hang on to your values, that being family, faith, and of course, hard work. So Jose Alfaro worked in the industry, the automotive industry, like others, but he also started his own newspaper, and that became his full-time employment. He was an entrepreneur and, like I say, a visionary. And he also organized dances. And when I say dances, they were very elegant. The ladies, you know, came dressed to the nines, and it was like the supper clubs that you see in the African-American community, the pictures you see of the 20s.
Right.
That's reflective of what we were going through as well, what we were experiencing. So we had Mr. Jose Alfaro. We had back in the early 20s clubs that started to sprout up from different parts of Mexico. But in the beginning, they were arriving from the central part of Mexico. And then as everything evolved, like in the 70s, we had people from Agualeguas, from Nuevo León, from the northern part of Mexico, the northeastern part of Mexico. So we've had these, and I would say the last 20 years, they're from Jalisco.
Yeah. You grew up in the part of Detroit that we now call Delray. What memories do you have of Delray during the 60s?
Delray, I wouldn't change my childhood for where I grew up for anything else in the world. It was a tight-knit working class community. It was primarily Hungarian and Polish, and we lived in the Hungarian part, and I loved it. I mean, we had diversity when that wasn't even a concept. You know, I was one of the few Latinos or Mexicanas that went to school there and grew up in Delray, but there was a variety of people, African-Americans, Appalachian whites. We had just a variety.
Yeah. What would you say? I mean, there are many examples in Detroit of folks who live side by side and mm-hmm. work together, but you know, so they may not be socializing together. They may not be intermarrying. Is there anything you could say that would provide context about how those communities, how and whether they interacted?
Well, you know, I didn't really describe entirely how it was in Delray. But there was a real bond, and it wasn't an issue. I mean, there was no issue of who, you stick to your own. We were all working class, and we were pretty much, that was the baseline for I think everyone who lived in Delray. And either you were working class or working poor, but you were all living, side by side, and there was a camaraderie there. So to that exists to this day. If you say, "Hey, I'm from Delray," oh my God, I'm from Delray, or my family's from Delray, right away there's a big smile. People just embrace it. And I think one of the other things that pulled us together was that we were the forgotten part of Detroit. We weren't really part of Southwest Detroit. We were just, like a forgotten stepchild.
Right. You wrote a book about the history of Mexican Town, and in it, you talk about the large portion of the neighborhood that was lost when I-75 was built
Yes.
and what was most impacted. Can you tell us a little bit more about how quickly and how completely things changed?
Yes. I'll tell you right now, we're still reeling from the effects of I-75 bisecting our community. And what was our saving grace was that we were not one or the other. In other words, we were not all residential, we were not all commercial. There was such a mix that we were able to withstand the changes that took place, but it was devastating. We had businesses that decided to move on and leave Detroit, and we had people that said, "You know what? I'm just moving out of Detroit." But the majority, I would say, that could stayed in Detroit and Southwest Detroit. But yes, it was devastating. Bagley Avenue was the heart and soul. That's really where Mexican Town began. And we refer to it as La Bagley, and it was about 14 blocks from the Lodge Freeway all the way to Clark Park. And it was primarily a business district. We had all these businesses, but where the freeway sliced Bagley in half right there, it really affected that area. And it also affected Michigan Avenue and 20th at that curve of I-75. Sat Western Market, which was the counterpart to Eastern Market.
Right. This part of town was, as you say, it wasn't entirely residential, it wasn't entirely commercial, it wasn't entirely industrial. And there were businesses that stayed and adapted. You've referenced the first tortilla factories, Mexican
Telford.
Village. Yeah, the oldest continually run restaurant in the area, the Honey Bee, La Colmena. How the businesses that were able to stay, how did they stay alive?
Well, there's this need for it's nostalgia, the comfort food. It's just so essential, food and everything that makes us feel at home in a place that we're not at home. I mean, we set our roots here, but we miss what we left behind or our grandparents left behind, and we carry that love and tradition, onto the next generation. So we're gritty. We're determined, we're very stubborn, and we love Detroit. We love Mexican Town, and we figure it out and we just stay there. We continue to build.
Yeah. And so it sounds like what you're saying is it wasn't just the fact that some people were still living there, but folks came back when they wanted that taste of home.
Yes, they do. And they continue to come back. And they make a point, they, meaning the families that have decided to move out, make a point of coming back to the parishes like Most Holy Trinity and Most Holy Trinity and St. Anne's, which is now Minor Basilica. The Vatican named it a minor basilica, which is a big deal. The Roman Catholic Church has been losing a lot of, people attending the masses and what have you because of population. And but what has happened here is we have uplifted the churches. And the ten mass attendance has been incredible. They've had to add several Spanish language masses to practically every parish.
Yeah. Do you know how many churches in the area do perform Mass in Spanish?
Well, I would say almost every Most Holy Trinity has a Most Holy Trinity, St. Anne's, Holy Redeemer. Holy Redeemer is heavily involved with the Mexican community. They're devout Catholics, and they recognize and respect our traditions and rituals that we've brought here from our hometowns, And so as a result, they do very well. And we have St. Gabriel's. There's probably about 10 churches just in Southwest Detroit alone, Roman Catholic churches that are doing very well because of the Latino or the Mexican community.
Yeah. You have said that Monsignor Clement Kem has had a lot to do with strengthening the community and maybe strengthening ties from people who may have not had as much in common, immigrants from Mexico, but also from Puerto Rico and Cuba and Central America. What were some of the things that he did to sort of bind people together?
Well, Monsignor Clement Kern, when he passed away, to this day, we affectionately call him Father Clement Kern, Father Kern. He really lived the Word of God. In other words, everything he did was for the greater good and for the people that he came in contact with. And he was pastor of Most Holy Trinity for many years until, well, he retired, but until he retired. He learned Spanish. He went to Mexico on one of his trips, learned Spanish, came back because he realized there were some issues in Corktown, and he wanted to help the people that were the parishioners. And he went beyond what a pastor would do. And he started nonprofit programs in Southwest Detroit. And he really did as much as he could to help people in the neighborhood in Corktown. And they expanded. They stayed there, but they expanded. When I say they, the Mexican families, the Puerto Rican families, the Cuban families that came early on. And with that, we started to move out of Corktown. We stayed in Corktown, a lot of us, but many of us started to move southwest. I credit him with helping us.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the impact of Ford Motor Company, past and present, bitter and sweet. Be right back. Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Maria Elena, when you think about Mexican Town's history as the neighborhood that built the car, as some people put it, is that significant to the effort to preserve the community and to preserve Hispanic culture?
Well, actually, that term, the neighborhood that built the car, was coined by Kathy Wendler, who was, well, she retired, but she's a former president of Southwest Detroit Business Association. And Southwest Detroit covers a lot of territory, and we're kind of folded in there. Mexican Town is a district that sits within all of Southwest Detroit, but that was by design. Southwest Detroit having people come in from everywhere. Henry Ford, as we all know, he was a brilliant man, but he wanted to make sure that his workers had an easy way to get to work and that they worked every day. And one of the ways of doing that was building houses like around Woodmere Cemetery. He had deals with people that had specific skills or specific responsibilities like mid-management, and would cut a deal with them that they had a home, a beautiful home, as long as they dedicated their life to Ford Motor Company. We had a trolley that evolved into the Baker Street. It was a Baker Street trolley from downtown that the trolley went right into the Rouge plant. And so it can't cut all the way through Southwest Detroit. And we had an incredible bus system that made sure that everyone, you really didn't need a car back in the day. You just jump on a bus and get to wherever you needed to go. So everything was by design so that you had a neighborhood of workers, auto workers, who General Motors and Ford Motor Company benefited from.
A lot of Detroiters can tell you that past isn't just present. In fact, it's not even past, really. I know a lot of people have been keeping an eye on what's happening with Ford Motor Company's acquisition of the iconic Michigan Central Station. Mm-hmm. There are plans to transform it into an innovation hub. And this is the intersection of four neighborhoods, including Mexicantown.
Yes.
It looks from the plans like Ford is developing with the area in mind. I was just wondering what your impressions are about how this is unfolding so far.
Well, I've had concerns from day one. I mean, I'm happy that they purchased the train station because it's been an eyesore for decades. But the biggest concern is everything that that's developed in front of the train station. Well, that's wonderful. It needs to be. But I'm concerned that we may be forgotten if we don't make enough noise and let people know that here we are and we would like to participate in this this opportunity, because we sit directly, Mexicantown sits directly behind that train station.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I am hearing and seeing is people coming in from and purchasing property. And I don't see a respect for the history of the area. That bothers me because it's like people want to rewrite history. And I always feel like you have to respect the place that you're moving into. It can only enhance the experience.
What do you think would be the difference between people being able to stay in the neighborhood and being subject to gentrification, leaving for some place less expensive?
I would prefer that they don't. We have people who have been there, that have been there for generations. They were there during the bad times, as well as the better times. So that doesn't mean that they're benefiting from it, but yet they're still there. This is home for them. And it's just like Delray. There's a handful of people, and if they're still there in Delray, but they're so determined to stay, you know, this is where I was born. This is where I grew up. This is my history. And I've, you know, in the case of Corktown and the developments that are taking place, you know, that are tied into Ford Motor Company, I think we have to look back and say, look, we have an opportunity like they're doing with with the cars. Mm-hmm. Right now. They're announcing, you know, we're going to do it right for the good of the planet. I get it. But we also have to do right by the people who live in this area and learn from the mistakes that have taken place over the years and see how we can work together.
And anyone who's been through this in their neighborhood can tell you, you know, changes like that can be subtle and have a lot of different aspects to them. There are some people, when property values in a neighborhood start rising, are able to sell a house that they've been wanting to sell for a long time. Mm-hmm. People who are able to retire, maybe, because they sell a house. You know, there are many sides to this story. When you do think, though, about some of the property tax increases that have hit people, is there anything mm-hmm. that you think would be of immediate benefit to folks who are trying to stay in Mexicantown right now?
Well, I really don't have the answers on that for sure. I mean, we have to work with them. And I agree with you. You know, this is God bless America. You know, this is the American dream is to prosper, to move forward, and you can live wherever you choose to live. And I'm not opposed to that whatsoever. What I am opposed to is, like with this gentrification, that property and an opportunity to move into an apartment that they say is going to be reasonable, and it isn't. It's reasonable, and I don't know what term and for whom. When you say $200,000 for an apartment, well, that's reasonable. You know, as opposed to $1 million apartment. Who are they talking to when they throw those numbers out there? You know, I'd like to see people who want to stay and figure out there has to be, I don't know if it's subsidizing, but doing something to accommodate the people who've been there through the thick and through the thin.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes at michiganradio.org and stream them whenever you like. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's pod was produced by Aaron Allen, Mike Blank, and by Mercedes Mejia. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. We're back in your feeds tomorrow.